Hello, everyone, and welcome to this podcast by SMRN. This is Kalpana Subramanian, and I'm with Juan Castrejon.
Hello, everyone.
And we are both going to talk about aesthetics of breath, a subject that we both are interested in. And we've been talking about for the past couple of weeks, and we decided to do this podcast on it. Breath is a really vast subject, and it's really impossible to do justice to it in one podcast. So what we decided to do for this podcast is basically talk about three aspects of it. One is, how can we explore non-Western genealogies of breath? Two, how do we conceptualize ideas of breath and becoming, the idea of self or no self? And finally, how does the idea of becoming translate as practice? So what is the relationship between breath and practice? We will cover these aspects, looking at it with these different perspectives.
I'm a PhD candidate at the University of Pennsylvania. I do my research on indigenous musical practices of the Northwestern Amazon, and also in sonic and listening epistemologies among dervishes from the Anatolian Peninsula.
I'm a PhD candidate at the Department of Media Study at the University at Buffalo, and I'm interested in cross-cultural philosophies of media, and especially focusing on film aesthetics. I'm looking at the aesthetics of breath in cinema, focusing on experimental film. And for this, I'm trying to draw from yoga and Buddhist traditions of breath to see how one can enrich the conversation on embodiment in contemporary discourses.
Yes, and this invitation from Kalpana to explore like what is the genealogy of breath from the perspective of yoga philosophy and Buddhist meditation practices inspires me to ask a similar question. What is the genealogy of breath from the sonic perspectives of dervishes from the Anatolian Peninsula? So today we are going to have this conversation in which each of us is going to present their own examples and trying to bridge connections between the work that breath does in different contexts. So the ney is a reed flute instrument that has been one of the instruments cultivated like under the Muslim mysticism or Sufism. The ney, or the sound of the ney, in which you noticed like the presence of air or breath intermingled with sound, is the way in which musicians and audience have the possibility to like get closer to divine love, right? So so the sound of the ney, the air, is received or is heard as a way in which the divine love can be experienced, right? So in my case, air is mediated by a instrument, right? So it's not like the human, but also this, there is like another than human, there is an instrument, right? So when a person is performing on the ney, actually is the encounter between two bodies, right? So the disposition or the intention of the ney zen or the ney player and the ethical work of the instrument, right? That that together allow this breathing in and breathing out to become a presence of divine love. So this is like how breathing and air comes together in the ney practice.
Yeah.
So now, Kalpana, at the beginning you were talking about the relation between breath and yoga practices. So I was wondering if, is there any differentiation between types of breath or types of air that is being conceptualized in yoga philosophy in different ways?
Yes. So from the perspective of yoga philosophy and Buddhist meditation practices, which have several overlaps, you know, breath is very foundational to these practices of both yoga as well as vipassana, which is a meditation technique. Mm-hmm. I myself am a yoga practitioner and I recently attended a vipassana course, so I'm learning the vipassana technique as well. So in these systems, breath or prana is considered to be the vital life force. And prana is like the, you know, the syllable pra is about constant or constancy. I guess it's just the idea of constant. Pra is the idea of constant and ana is about movement. So it's about constant movement in some way. In a sense, you can talk about it as like a substantial motion of mm-hmm. sorts. Yeah. And, you know, prana is considered superior to all the senses. It's considered to be the mold in which all the senses, I mean, even the mind is considered a sense. And that too manifests through prana. So it's the force that, there are different types of prana in the yogic system. And this would be like, I'm just going to tell you the names. There are different types of prana in the yogic system. There's prana, apana, samana, udana, and vyana. So each of these has a different connotation and relates to a different aspect of the body. So prana is more of the, you know, the foremost energy, the vital energy, and it's supposed to travel in an upward direction, but it can also move downwards. And but the kind of prana that moves, the kind of air that moves downward is also apana, which flows in the opposite direction of prana.
Mm-hmm.
And the practice of, you know, pranayama can help you regulate these in yoga, the direction and the way these, the way breath connects to different nodal centers in the body, which are called chakras. Also, there is the idea of samana, which is, samana means balancing. So the idea of a balancing air, which actually it focuses more on the fire element of the body, and it sort of works, if you can, you can connect it with functions of digestion mm-hmm. a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So samana is, you know, sort of related to that. And then you have udana, which is more about flight and sense of movement. And, you know, it coordinates the nervous system, or it connects with the nervous system in different ways and helps proper coordination of the body, thinking of it in a physiological sense.
Mm-hmm.
And vyana vayu is a sort of the fifth and the most integrated type of prana, which flows through different organs of the body and through subtle, through your nadis or the energy channels. So these different kinds of prana exist in relation to the yogic body. in Vipassana, the Buddhist meditation practice, we look more at observation of breath more than regulation of breath. And in the observation of breath, breath essentially is the transitional transition between mind and matter, you know, body and world. So there's all these qualities to it that we can talk more about.
Yeah. I wanted to bring a quote from Avicenna. I think gives us a great understanding, like in which moment the intersection between breath as this physiological movement meets the artistic practice, in which sound and music can transform not only the musician experience but also the audience, which at the end will be what I mentioned about breath, sound as love, as divine love. God created the left side of the heart and made it hollow in order that it should serve both as a storehouse of the breath and as the seat of manufacture of the breath. He also created the breath to enable the drives of the soul to be conveyed into the corresponding members. In the first place, the breath was to be the rallying point for the faculties of the soul, and in the second place, it was to be an emanation into various members and tissues of the body, whereby these could manifest the functions or those drives. And here, there is another quote that is so important in our conversation. The beginning of the breath is as divine is a divine emanation from potentiality to actuality, proceeding without intermission or stint until the form or the state is completed and perfected. So similarly, although derived from the same attenuated portion of the humors, nevertheless, each of the three breaths, that is natural, animal, and vital, has its own particular temperament, because the proportional quantities of the more attenuated portions of the humors and the manner in of their commixture are peculiar to each breath. There is one single breath which accounts for the origins of the others. This breath, according to the most important philosophers, arises in the heart, passes thence into the principal centers of the body, lingering in them long enough to enable them to impart to it their respective temperamental properties. So, lingering in the cerebrum, it receives a temperament whereby it is capable of receiving the drives of sensation and movement. In the liver, it receives the drive of nutrition and growth. In the generative glands, it acquires a temperament which prepares it from receiving the drive of generation. So, in a way, like even though in this Muslim tradition, there is not this idea of the chakra, right? We see here how breath is going to the centers and mobilizing and creating different energy, and at the end, the perception of the sound, and at the end, the remembrance of the divine origin. That is the who, meaning the who is this like the ordinary air transform in a conscious way of producing sound, that is ultimately the sound of the instrument you just heard.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, there are a lot of overlaps, and I think there's a lot of give and take between these different traditions of breath or understanding breath, and it's interesting to see how they are articulated in these different ways. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to add that apart from the five pranas, there's also something known as the upapranas. And the upapranas are more of the, you know, the sort of the kind of breath or air that is about, that manifests in other ways, such as like, for example, burping, you know, the removing the blockages. And this kind of the prana, upa prana, which is called naga, is said to remove blockages of prana and apana and prevents gas formation in the digestive system.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of even the kind of prana related with blinking, you know, and the controlling of eye, opening and closing of the eyelids, that's a kind of breath associated with it.
Yes,
and right. There's Devadatta, which is related to yawning and how expelling gas or air in different ways from the body, you know, and it's similar to Samana Prana, which balances. And there's Krikala, which is the upa prana, which is, you know, it can be understood through the action of sneezing, where there's a release of air. And also, now in connection with the heart, there's Dhananjaya, or the opening or closing of the heart valves, you know, the kind of prana that aids the functioning of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are the different ways in which prana very, very directly connects to the physiology of the body.
Yes. So, and in the case of the Nei tradition, the physiology of the body needs to be understood, like, not the body like in a naturalistic way, but the body understood as the place in which the soul can interact with existence. So this is really different, because and this is also why the Nei teachers say that you need to use your heart to play the Nei, instead of you need to use your lungs to play the Nei, right? Because they expect Nei students to like to play the Nei, to blow into the Nei from their hearts, right? So not from a like poetic perspective, but from a kind of spiritual physiology, as Henri Corbin will put it, in which the air, like this hot air, and the substance of love are a single entity.
Right. Yeah, that's really, it's beautiful how, you know, so the idea of breath as a, is not really a metaphor. It is actually connected to a very physical being.
Mm-hmm.
And so this actually brings us to, you know, questions of, you know, if you further think about questions of breath and body, one cannot help but come to the discussion of subjectivity and asubjectivity. So I wondered if you might want to say something about how do you articulate the position? Is there a subjective position of breath from the perspective that you're talking about?
So, as I mentioned before, the subject, meaning like the musician, he has his body, his own body, but there is also the body of the instrument, right? And in this tradition, the instrument belongs to the teacher. And quite often, the teachers made the instruments from the students, right? So they usually say, this Nei, this instrument that I'm giving to you right now and that I made for you, is not yours yet, right? So they say, I will tell you, or I will let you know when the Nei is yours, right? Because you'd need to...
when the time is right.
Yes. And that means the student needs to go through a process in which his breathing techniques are purified, are an entire like personal transformation, so that this transformation will resound through the instrument, right? So in this, like during the training, even though the person has the Nei in her hand, like in his hands or in her hands, the Nei belongs to the teacher, right? So in this sense, there is like a connection that help the student to go through the process of learning how to perform on the ney properly. Because the like performing on the ney is not just a musical practice, right? It's a practice that is the result of a personal devotion. And this personal devotion is not an exercise of the self, right? It's an exercise on the self, right? So this training is like gradually making the ney student realize that he's not himself when he's performing on the ney, right? So he is becoming, first it needs to become one with the instrument, and then it needs to become one with the origin of his breath, that is who, or that is God, mm-hmm. right? And the teacher helps the student to go through this process. Mm-hmm. So the student begins feeling like his subjective modes of breathing, but then during the process he's accompanied to a more subtle way in which he realized or she realized that the person is a receptacle or an instrument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this idea of the ney as an instrument, I can also connect it to the idea of body as an instrument in yes. yoga and yes. vipassana.
Yes.
You know, where the body becomes the medium and the channel, which sort of through which prana or air or breath passes, and therefore breath is also like, you know, not completely yours, with the idea of ownership, like you said, mm-hmm. the ney belongs to, mm-hmm. you know, there's a time when the student will be allowed to use it,
mm-hmm.
so it doesn't really belong to anyone. There's a collective ownership, there's an intersubjectivity,
mm-hmm.
so in you know what the aesthetics of breath allows for is a conceptualization of a more intersubjective, collective and affective space of breath, which moves, it starts with the personal, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe it starts with the self and a subjective, orientation, because it is that individual who has to, you know, practice or be or observe or, you know, regulate their breath or
yes.
whatever.
Yes.
But eventually the that is not the goal. The goal right. is not for individual self-liberation. It is
yes,
for a collective, for a collective idea of well-being. I don't mm-hmm. want to use that word well-being, but it is about collectivity.
Or well-living.
Yeah, maybe well-living. So it is about a collectivity and, you know, the idea of shared breath is something Luce Irigaray talks about.
Yes, yes, yes. It's really interesting because I arrived to this idea of breath as a common practice through Luis Castro Nogueira. He and his other two brothers, they were bridging philosophy, social sciences, and evolutionary biology. And they created a term, cineosis. And cineosis, it comes from the Greek cineontes. And the cineosis is like the ways and the practices and the context in which humans and other than humans breathe together the air that they produce, condition, and acclimatize. So they call this atmopoiesis.
Wow.
Right.
That's an interesting term. And it's interesting like how these, you know, yeah, all these different genealogies. I think that's what's interesting about breath, because it sort of permeates different philosophical understandings of how we conceptualize, you know. I mean, it's just quite omnipresent and ever-present, and it can be conceptualized in different ways. There's a fluidity
yes.
to the nature of breath. And so one question is, like, I wonder why breath has been ignored. Why do you think breath has been ignored by Western philosophy, more or less?
I remember reading an article on Leibniz, and it has to be with the medicalization of the body, right? So when the body is subjectified, and we know this from Foucault, and we know this from other philosophers and scholars of critical race theory, in which the body has been going through other like social processes that have produced bodies that were dehumanized in such a way in which air and the possibility for breathing and breathe out was not that fundamental at all, because was taken for granted the physiological descriptions of air, but also the philosophical tenets of the subject were going through a different categories.
Yeah, and I think, yes, that's an important point that you made, because it's the medicalization of the body is essentially like, so you're coming from a Western philosophy to medical science, and this perspective of the body, which is fundamentally rooted in Cartesian dualisms, is a huge problem for the further conceptualization of breath. So it's almost imperative that we look for other genealogical roots of, understanding how breath can be, can help us think about embodiment.
Yes.
And so many other subjects differently.
Yes.
And its possibilities for engaging both with the particular and the individual, as well as the collective and the affective, are immense. So this is something that I find is very important. Also, the questions of sharing are related to questions of healing,
mm-hmm.
and questions of just being.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
So all these ideas can be informed greatly through breath studies, which I hope there will be more space for.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, and I think, just to conclude, I guess, I would say that you cannot think of to practitioners and scholars and artists, I would say that we cannot conceptualize an embodied or living art if it doesn't breathe. You know, there is nothing. Without breath, you cannot imagine a living music or cinema or theater or anything, or even literature. So the idea of embodiment is redundant if we do not acknowledge breath, and so it is important to not take it for granted and to really make space for it, because along with it also come the questions of, you know, the ethics and who is allowed to breathe.
Yes.
In what conditions can we breathe,
which kind of air. Yeah, right.
Especially coming from New Delhi right now, it's hard to breathe where I come from.
And myself coming from Medellin as well.
Exactly. So can we conceptualize like what is the ethics of, you know, breath? I think it can move us towards a more integrated understanding of aesthetics on the whole. And